You're listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. Tonight we talk about David Cronenberg's romantic body horror comedy, The Shrouds.
You no trouble. Me, fifth element. Supreme being.
You will be a weapon. You will be a minister of death, praying for war. But until that day, you are cute. Sound off like you got a bear.
I was wondering what would break first. Your spirit or your money?
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
God is dead.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean,
biblical?
What he means is Old Testament,
yes.
Mr. Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Dead.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes, the dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
The podcast, Movie Crew Podcast, Movie Makers Talk and Movies. We're your host. I'm editor Brian Elkins. With me here tonight, cinematographer Jared Callett.
How dark are you willing to go, Brian?
You know, I'll walk with you in your cemetery for a little bit.
Okay. All right. We'll do a bit of a peep show.
Oh, I need a cigarette. We also have with us director of photography, Mike Griggs.
This is not the first date vibes I was looking for, Brian.
I'm sorry, grief is rotting my teeth.
That's a catchy slogan.
Hey, at least he was very upfront about his like psychosis and his shit, you know? He didn't bury it. He put it on Front Street.
Okay. Yeah.
Airing out your trauma on the first date is a real surefire way to get that person to be like, bye!
You're coming to my restaurant in my cemetery and hanging out with my body. You know what I mean? May not be for everybody, but it's the body that I've got.
This is my wife from 4 years ago. You know,
Some people have skeletons in their closet. I keep mine right here on my iPhone. Right.
And you can look at her if you want.
If you want.
On our grave television. TV gravestone.
Graveside viewing. At a whole nother level.
I like how it's got a little shelf on it as well, so you can like put little trinkets or, you know, little religious icons or maybe flowers even. Who knows?
Well, it's the Jewish way. Gotta put a little rock up there, a little stone.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised there were no flowers. I guess like these people are not into flowers. They're like, I'm watching their body decay. I don't need flowers.
Why do you need the flowers to decay when you can see the body do it instead?
Okay.
Yes, right. Exactly.
You fixed it, Mike. I got to know. You got to settle this, Mike. Jared and I, we had a little bit of a debate. Did you like this more than The Brood?
Oh, my God. Well, The Brood was fucking horrible, so yes. This was not a terrible movie.
Yeah, I told you. I told you, Callan.
I only saw it once, and there was much about it that I feel like I might appreciate with a second viewing. There is some density to it. But overall, it was just kind of... I don't know. It was an interesting exploration of grief. It was an interesting exploration of obsession and lust and jealousy. I guess this is just like Cronenberg's way of doing those things. Like I don't know. I liked the topics. I liked the things that were being explored. But it was still a little too Cronenberg at times. It was manageable. But this dude likes his weird shit.
Yeah, man, he's got his own point of view on things, and he tries to be as original in his own way as possible with dealing with his own shit. I mean, last time he was dealing with divorce and child separation, and this time it's dealing with death. Still body fascination. That's his thing. Like, you know, he's known as the body horror guy, but when you hear him talk about that, I actually listened to an interview earlier today, and he says, I don't even know what body horror is. You know, like he's so kooky about his own self.
It's when you put vaginas literally on everything and then penises on everything. That's, you know, and then your body also like transforms into something else. these are the, I mean, Cronenberg, if we need you to define it for you, we can't.
Yeah, someone was saying that the substance is like, you know, a giant homage to him from other filmmakers, basically like taking on his style and putting it into, you know, a different way. And he was like, oh, I think that's really cute and really, I'm really flattered by that, but I don't really know what body horror is.
His son even makes those movies, like Possessor and Infinity Pool. Yeah. And those are like body horror films. He should know.
And the reason I said comedy at the beginning, Mike, is that actually he describes this as a romantic comedy.
What the fuck? What part of this movie is supposed to be comedic? I mean, there are funny elements that are like breaking up some of the tension, but like what part of this movie is comedic? Like that's a totally different vibe.
Well, I think he's being funny when he says that as well.
he's a little tongue in cheek by saying that.
All the comedy bits are kind of morbid and sick, or it's somebody saying something like really morbid or sick, and then you get a normal person's reaction to it. But yeah, it's not laugh a minute funny.
It's definitely not.
I miss Dane Cook in this movie. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. Like, if it was supposed to be a romantic.
Yeah, we're digging him out of the grave, huh?
He's digging himself out of the grave.
When was the last time we saw Dane Cook in anything?
Oh, thankfully, a long time ago.
Mr. Brooks. Hey, that was the last time I saw him.
Oh, wow.
Hey, Dan in real life was great. That was the last
that was,
movie.
Yeah, no, that's a redeeming movie of his because he's supposed to be an asshole.
I recasted him in that, you know, in my head. You know, I was like, oh, he's not really in that. Yeah, it was somebody that's watchable.
that's fair. Yeah, yeah.
Not that he's terrible. He's just so vanilla, blank, mediocre, doesn't register.
There you go.
Yeah, something along those lines.
And how also did you feel that about this movie?
That's not what I've... this movie made me...
Tell me what you feel,
it's
Brian.
It's not sad. It's not depressed. It's... I don't know. A little of it is like a little creeped out by it.
Mm. A little too morbid, a little too dark, a little too... I like sex with dead people.
The dream sequences really fucked me up, I'll be honest. Yeah. All the dream sequences with his wife, I thought all of those were heartbreaking and traumatizing and frightening all at the same time. They were like really sweet and very honest pieces. Like, and then like just not only the surgery, like when his wife comes back in like the second dream and her breast is removed, and like how the scar is like pretty
just open and still
pretty medically accurate, but still looks Frankenstein, with big sew lines and stuff. And then they would be so tender, and I don't know, it was.
Yeah, it's hard to dissociate with the amount of like heavy things that are happening while they are also being so genuine and authentically tender to each other.
Yeah, I thought those were definitely the standout moments.
Yeah.
For me. Also very dream. The whole movie has this very hypnotic, dreamlike quality to it. The pacing's slow, nothing ever gets really fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
You never know what to believe. Anything.
Yeah.
Even like every time you deal with Guy Pearce, you don't know what the fuck's going on.
The parts that I wanted to see again to like try and interpret, because everybody has so many fucking like conspiracy theories, including Guy Pearce. Like it was hard to tease out what was actually happening.
Yeah. On my first viewing, I was extremely confused with the whole conspiracy theory and what are these growths on the bones.
Yeah.
Very, very confused how that was connecting to the story with him and his wife and the grief and being able to let go and not knowing the answers to things. Like, I was able to connect that they're not able to know the answers to the conspiracies, but I was like, how are these conspiracies and these techno paranoid ideas, how does that connect to this grief?
It's the external thing that pushes him away from his wife's body to actually help him move on. There's a reason that he actually has to go away. Because if he didn't have that moment, then he would just wallow away and then eventually be buried next to her. But this gives a reason for him to move on.
If he moves on, I still don't know how to interpret the end of this movie.
He's projecting his wife's image on, you know, the new woman. You know, so he's still carrying the baggage of that, but it is still that's the new surrogate for his wife, I would say.
I guess he's like trying to move on, but I don't know. There's always going to be a piece that doesn't or something. I guess it's saying something along those lines, but I don't know. because the surgery stuff comes up again, like in that at the very end sequence, and that is just, I don't know, that seems traumatic to me, you know. But this guy looks at his wife's corpse riding all the time.
Well, are you talking about like when the avatar AI thing like had the whole thing from the dream, or are you talking about when he imagined the other woman?
Yeah,
in the airplane. Yeah,
I forgot what was her name. The Hungarian.
The wife.
Wife, yeah. I forget what her name was, her character's name. But, yeah, when she's on the plane at the very end.
Oh, the blind lady?
The blind woman, yeah.
Yeah. He has a dream, and he wakes up, and he rolls over, and he touches her, and she turns around, and she's got the scars that his wife had. She's missing the arm.
So is the point that he is causing this maiming to the people that are connected to him, or that he's carrying this grief with him to the next relationship? Like, I don't know. I think they're interesting visuals to explore, but there's not a lot of conclusion.
It's left open for you to get what you want out of it. Like my thought was, like I said, that that's him just projecting his wife's, you know, onto her. Like he's never going to be able to like let go of her, even though he's moving on.
Mm. He's going to be buried in, what was it, Grave Tech, Budapest?
In Budapest.
It'll be fine. You'll love it there.
It was weird that how shallow the graves were. When they were going back in and they're reburying those people, and they were pulling that old man out, and he was kind of hanging out of his shroud. That was a really shallow grave.
It was like barely 2 feet, if that.
Yeah, I was like, holy shit. Well, you know, with the shrouds, you don't have to bury him 6 feet down, you know.
Oh, okay, maybe that's what it was. They're like, look, we're not paying for all that cable, all right?
It's an extra 4 feet, man.
Per grave. I mean, that shit adds up. Okay, overhead.
Hey, fiber optic cables are expensive, y'all.
We got to think about our overhead, gentlemen.
I don't know why. The clients aren't going anywhere. Everybody's dying to get in. Sorry. Had to make at least one point.
What happens if your family quits paying the... now, is this a forever thing, or is that like a monthly bill?
I assumed it was like a subscription model, like you're paying once a month.
So what happens if that lapses? Do they dig you out of the Grave Tech grave and like, hey, you can pick up your Uncle Tom by the end of the week or going into the incinerator?
I'm going to say based on the number of scenes that they had where they were like, oh, there's politics involved and yeah, you can't just go digging things up. Like I'm probably going to say no, but definitely they would lose the app.
They cut your feed. You don't get to watch anymore.
It's like old TV when we were kids. Like they it counts down and it plays the fucking national anthem and then waves the flag and then it goes pew and it shuts off.
Off air. Your mother-in-law is finally off air.
And they dump
Oh, thank God! I thought she would never decompose.
They dump scarab beetles into the hole just to eat them out, and then they'll open it up for the next client.
Yep. All right, this one's all cleaned out.
This is valuable space.
Well, if you added the Beatles, then people actually may watch that. All right, Jared?
For an extra $5,000, we'll speed the process along.
Ooh. Organically, of course.
Oh, yeah. Well, obviously, organically, you know.
I love that one guy from Iceland's all worried about the shrouds putting toxins into the ground.
Dude, he's so fucking worried.
That was a cool burial site, though. That he was walking around in
with
Iceland.
The little mounds.
Yeah. And we didn't get to see the house much because they kept doing like an edit thing with the they kept losing the signal.
I like that, but I also think what's really cool about that is that he's holding the phone out, right? And then he turns around and the sun hits him from behind and you see the shadow of his hand holding the phone hit his body. And like it felt like it was still coming from the phone, not from, you know, like a film camera. There was a cool little moment there. I was like, oh, I like that. That's nice.
Yeah, because they definitely were using some nice cameras for all those like FaceTime conversations.
Yeah.
What'd you think about all the fucking screens that we had to watch in this?
I think it's okay. I mean, I even like all the little Tesla stuff. You know, it felt like a Black Mirror episode, which apparently it was designed to be a Netflix series that never got full funding. So it got transferred over to a feature film.
Okay, that explains some of the pacing. Holy shit.
Well, Cronenberg said he only wrote 2 episodes. That's as far as he ever got. And Netflix was like, nope, we're good. Turns out we don't really want this.
wait, what?
We don't really want this.
You're doing what with people's bodies? I know you're into body horror, but come on.
But I was reading somewhere, I think on Wikipedia or something, where they said it was going to be like a 10-episode like limited run. I don't know where they got the 10 episodes from, but I was like, I wouldn't want to watch 9-plus hours of this.
Fuck no. I could see maybe like 6 tops, but Jesus, 10?
I was good with the 2. I was good with this movie's runtime. And
Yeah.
I got your ideas and your flavor.
Honestly, it dragged me the most in the times where we were watching something happen on a fucking screen. Like the one time when he was in the bathtub and we were watching that dude, it felt like just a random YouTube video of like a speaker, and it was like 2 minutes. Like we watched the entire fucking video of the dude talking, and I was just like, oh my God, can we just cut away and get through this, please? Like, I'm so bored. Why are we sitting here and watching this? Like, what is this moving along? What is this helping? Nothing. It's just like dragging.
Yeah, you know, it's a exposition dump.
Except it didn't say anything.
No, it lets you know that he got rich through the automotive business, and he's connected all throughout Hungary, and he has his hands in political, I don't know.
Yeah, but why do we need all that information about that character? Like, we got most of it from the fucking woman,
I guess that's true. You do get a lot repeated later with her. I didn't hate that moment.
It felt like doubly long, like Peter Jackson indulgence levels of going on too long. There are spiders in the valley. Cut away.
The one scene that I kind of didn't like with the phone and or watching a screen is when Guy Pearce comes over to Diane Kruger's house and confronts her, and he's like, "I'm going to commit suicide." And
oh yeah.
He's like, "I did all this crap," and I know the character in the scene is trying to hide the fact that she's recording him. But I mean, you're not even seeing Guy Pearce's face on screen most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was a really, really interesting choice. I'm like, how do you have this fucking top-level actor, and you're like, you know what we need you to do? Act with your fingers, because we're not going to see your face.
Well, he's kind of doing this. We don't know whether he has all of his fingers or not, so his fingers are really important, Mike.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, he is acting a lot with his hands. Like, there's a lot of shakiness and things that's going on, but, like, the finger bit was a giveaway earlier. Like, there's a moment where they show him, like, tapping
fidgeting.
On well no 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 where he's typing on the keyboard, and I'm like, no fucking engineer that it has the level of programming skill that he does is going to just be like willy-nilly like point and peck like he is. Like, this is fucking weird, and there's a reason that it's weird. And then obviously his fingers were gone. I was like, oh, that's why he was hunting and pecking. Got it. Cool. That was surprising. Oh no.
But you can actually see those his fingers earlier in some of those scenes in the movie.
But I'm telling you, they're like on the second viewing, I noticed that at the very beginning, there's a point where he sits up and he puts his fucking hand flat on his thigh, and you can see that they digitally went in and cut out these two.
I know, but that cell phone video where he's confronting Diane Kruger, like there is a good like 30 seconds where his face isn't even in the frame, and you're just looking at his hands, and you can clearly see he's got 10 fucking fingers.
Well, he's got 10 fingers. They're just chopped off halfway.
No, he's got them all. He's got them all. They're there.
And it's a left hand. I know you probably saw the right hand, but it's a left hand. The one with the fucked up.
I know.
So you're saying that he did actually get his hands chopped off at the end there? That was not a fake thing that he did?
I don't know what, because Jared's right. There is a scene, you know, where his fingers are gone. But then there's other scenes in the movie where you can clearly see him. I don't know if that's done on purpose or if they just didn't have the budget to go in there and remove them. And they were like, well, they're kind of hidden. That's good enough.
And who's going to watch this twice anyways?
God damn it.
I'm pretty sure we are probably some of the only people that have watched it more than once. Come on.
That's true. That is true.
This movie bombed bad.
Bro, Brian and I had a private screening, which was incredible.
Oh, yeah? When did I go? Did I go fucking Wednesday or Thursday? Hang on, let me look. I went Wednesday. When I looked on Tuesday, it was in, like, Theater 11. And then when I went on Wednesday, it was in Theater, like, 7 or some shit. It went from, like a 60 or 80-person screen to, like, a 20-person screen. And I was like, damn it. It was still there on through Thursday, but Tuesday apparently went so fucking bad. They were like, we're not keeping this on a big screen. Ain't nobody fucking coming to
this. I hated that because I would have liked to have seen it again.
Well, it was only playing on 279 screens in America. Or I guess that's North America. Fuck. So that's like nothing. And it still hasn't made $1 million. Yeah.
Holy shit, really?
Yeah, in 3 weeks.
Damn.
Wow.
Might not get to make another movie. Oof.
I don't know. You know, like, this
is half the budget of his last one. So it just keeps going down.
I couldn't find what the budget of this was.
Well, I heard him say that. He said this was half the budget of the previous.
I saw.
What was his previous?
$27 million was Crimes of the Future.
Did you watch that one with us, Mike?
No. And then I heard you talk about it, and I was like, that's why I didn't watch it.
That had a really big cast, though. That had Viggo. Yeah.
And they're plastic eaters.
Leah Seydoux and Kristen Stewart. So
that's someone with all the fucking like drills that go into people's brains and shit, right?
Like, you can't feel pain, and there's, like, there's like surgical, like, art.
Oh,
there people who eat plastic.
Yeah. There is, like, a brain drill weapon. I forgot about that.
Yeah, not my jam. This honestly, like, of Cronenberg's movies that I have seen, that I have enjoyed, like, watching, like, this is up there with History of Violence and, what's the other Viggo one?
Eastern Promises?
Yes, or Eastern Danger? Promises. Oh, okay. Yeah, both of those I thought were like really good movies, and then kind of realized later, oh, that was Cronenberg, but they also weren't quite so like body horror style type things. It was just, but I also haven't seen them since like they came out, so I don't remember. But this felt more like those to me as opposed to like The Brood, where it's like, it didn't feel so actively trying to make everything feel unsettling. It was just like unsettling parts that were an element of the themes that he was trying to explore and work through. Which I found a significantly more enjoyable movie-going experience, but still didn't love it in that sense.
This definitely has like a little bit of everything from, I guess, his previous films. It does remind me the most of Videodrome, though, with like there's this new technology. You know, how is it changing us? There's this espionage plot. Like, oh, who's trying to get this? You know, what are they doing with it? Are they spying on us? Are they assassinating us?
What was the whole point of all the China, Russia thing? Like, that was seem such a, it feels so removed from the story that we're actually following. That is it just the it's just the way to get him to leave, right?
Is well, if you move on, what Cronenberg said, and this is one of the things that really helped me like understand the conspiracy thing, was listening to his interview. I don't know how you're supposed to get it really without listening to him, but what he said was when somebody dies in your life, somebody close, death is meaningless. There's no meaning in it. And you go down the rabbit hole of like, well, maybe the doctors didn't prescribe the right chemotherapy. Maybe these doctors didn't know what they were doing. Maybe something they did caused her to die. Which is really just like easy conspiracy theories. And that's how he, you know, he was like, that's how these conspiracy theories are connected in this film. I don't know if you can get that really just from watching the movie. I certainly didn't out of my first viewing.
No, I read it all as this is just the anxieties that we live with and the ways that our brain tries to work through the meaninglessness of death. Yeah. And trying to, like, because humans are pattern-finding creatures. We look to ascribe meaning to things. And in the face of something that has no inherent benefit from one perspective, like, we look for ways to make it make sense. Like, yeah, it's got to be someone's fault. Let's try and assume intent as opposed to, no, sometimes the universe just sucks and it just is hard. But, yeah, trying to connect it to Guy Pearce's whole thing, like, that... I don't know. It felt like an alternate thing. Like let's just explore that storyline as like an extra little bit just for something. Like it. That part wasn't gelling for me. Like I couldn't tell what was wrong, weird with it.
Yeah, I think because it is kind of hard to put that together and make that jump.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the same time, like, how would you do that visually? I don't know. Like, how do you connect that? Like, my grief has led me down. And I guess that's what the movie's trying to do with, like, the sister who had the conspiracy theories, you know, like the doctors are killing.
Literally horny for conspiracy theories.
I guess that's what they're, you know, Cronenberg's like, look, I'm holding your hand and telling you, but it's like, dude, there's so much in this movie, though, at the same time, you know, like, I'm getting, like, you're showing me that, but then I'm also getting hung up on the fact that it's like, you know, fucking Vincent Cassell's character's got these things where, like, he doesn't know the answers to, like, did his wife cheat on him, and, you know, he's never gonna fucking know that answer.
Especially now the other guy's dead and possibly buried in his grave.
Right? And it's just like, ah! It's a lot to take in.
He's so obsessed with his wife's body, even down to the point where, you know, fucking, man, like, this other guy had sex with her when she was 19 years old. That really bugs me, you know. But, like, he's finally, you know, having sex with her sister, who, like, is either her twin sister or not. We don't know.
There's a photo of both of them next to the
body again, but he still moves on and goes on with a blind Asian lady who is nothing like the body that he's obsessed with.
It's a different body, bro. Like, you know, I don't know.
Her breasts are bigger, apparently. My breasts are larger. Can't you tell?
Oh, I was talking about the.
Are you talking about the like the blind lady?
Yeah, because that's fitting into his new life. Because when we first see him, like all the characters are like, "Oh, I like what you did to the, you know, your new apartment. It's very, very Japanese.
Yeah,
very zen. I like that, man." You know, it kind of fits in with, like, I don't know, he's doing, like, a whole new aesthetic. He's doing a whole new him. I don't know, that part of that made sense to me.
But he didn't move to Japan. He moved to Budapest.
Well, you know. If he had met an awesome Japanese girl, you know.
Yeah.
That had a rich husband that wanted to invest in his corporation.
Yeah.
She was checking a lot of boxes, Jared, okay?
A lot of boxes.
Yeah, especially the biggest box that she couldn't see how ugly I am, you know.
She put her hands on his face.
She's like, let me touch your face.
Twice. That's a good comedy beat. When she wants to touch his face again, and he's just like, does the gulp, and he's like, yeah, okay. And then it just cuts, and it's like, yeah, they fucked. They totally fucked. Is it trailer time?
It feels like it.
It does feel like it. All right, we're going to play the trailer. Yeah, we're going to play the trailer for David Cronenberg's The Shrouds.
The Shroud?
Yeah. We'll be back. Fucking forgot the name for a second. God damn it. I did almost say the proof.
When they lowered my wife into the coffin, I had an intense urge to get into the box with her.
You never considered cremation?
How dark are you willing to go? Those are the shrouds.
You mean like burial shrouds?
Not exactly. It's basically a kind of camera in her grave.
Don't you find it hard to take?
It comforts me.
It's like she's floating in outer space.
Word of warning. If their shrouds can be weaponized, people will find a way to do it. They found something.
What is that? Where did that video come from? It's walking amongst the wreckage.
Brutal. Some real hatred there.
What's the motive?
You used to say that they were killing your sister in the hospital.
I just knew they were constantly edging towards experimental treatments they weren't being upfront about.
You still have her dental records here.
I still do. Do you want JPEGs?
It's obvious they were tracking you through her.
Why would anyone want to track me?
Well, you tell me. I made a career out of bodies. I'm so happy to be involved.
Involved?
It makes me feel so alive.
I'm paranoid now. Things are getting weird. The desecration wasn't just random. She's in my head, my dreams, my life.
What could that mean, I wonder?
What's going on?
I can't believe it.
Shrouds.
It's not meant for the living.
Maybe not meant for the dead either.
All right, we're back. That was the trailer for David Cronenberg's The Shrouds. That was a good trailer. I enjoyed that.
It's a good trailer. It reminded me that he puts the shroud on, and then you see the computer peel his skin away and go down into the muscular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is that what it's doing with the bodies too? You're not actually seeing the decomposition, you're seeing through the skin.
No, you are. He says that they have MRI and CAT scan. Sorry. Fuck. Yep. God damn.
Scat cam.
Scat cam. What the fuck? What was that trying to say? I don't know.
Yeah,
right? Say, look, man, sometimes you got to break out in a little song and dance. Yeah, that technology is built into it when he's talking about the 8K cameras and stuff. So I guess if you wanted to, you could do like mini x-rays and look further into their bones and stuff if you wanted to do that.
Mm. Sexy.
While you're getting your 360 degree...
Yeah. No, he demonstrates that though. Like he does like a zooming in thing that like goes beneath some of her outer bits that are still there, and he like zooms in on her bones. That's how he initially finds the growth things that he thinks are on.
I thought he saw that one of them is like in the nose. The nose is gone, and you see it in the nose cavity.
Which, do you think those were actually things on her body, or do you think that's something that was just on the camera feed?
We'll never know, man.
Which version of it do you believe? I mean, I know the movie doesn't actually like say, but I'm saying like which one feels more true to you guys.
I kind of get the feeling that like Guy Pearce and his ex-wife were kind of fucking with him. They were totally fucking with Kirsch.
Yeah.
That's what I kind of think. I don't think there was any Russians or any Chinese. I don't know. Or they could have been there.
You think the two of them were working together? Because she seems like she fucking hates that guy.
She does seem that way, but I don't. The fingers thing, when she talks about it being lost in shop class, I don't know. That doesn't ring exactly true for me. Like, that never came up. You never noticed that. Somebody missing fingers, you know, on their hand, and especially their hands on a keyboard all the time. Like, that's all they're doing all day for work. I have a hard time buying that bullshit. But maybe.
So you think she was like, covering of in some kind of way.
Yeah.
Who was in the grave then? Or was that even real?
Yeah, I think that was just all faked.
Wait, you're talking about the grave next to the wife, or who was...
At the end.
Yeah, because you get to the end, and the doctor that was taking care of the wife that has disappeared to Iceland, you find out that he's been shot in the head, and he's been placed in the grave next to Kirsch's wife, where he was going to lie, next to her. But then... he never digs the body up, so you don't know. That could have just been something that was put there, like that, like the one Asian doctor says.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, these are just 3D fake images.
Yeah, they even showed that like breakdown that he showed them in the trailer, as if it was like that was a good use of footage that doesn't have enough context to understand what it is actually.
So if like Cronenberg's going with this thing of like, we believe in conspiracy theories because of like, you know, we're looking for meaning in death. I don't know. It's easier to see that it's not really the Chinese. It's not the Russians. That's such a big elaborate plan that Murphy's Law, the simplest answer.
Yeah.
Or no, that's anything bad can happen. What is it? Occam's Razor? Is that what it is? I forget what it is. Anyway, whatever. The simplest answer is usually the right thing. And Guy Pearce being mad because he thinks his wife is having an affair. Well, I don't know. It's not his wife.
Ex-wife.
It's his ex-wife. So she's not having an affair. He's just jealous. Whatever.
You'll always be my wife.
Yeah, no, bro. That's not how that works.
And I do like how like Vincent Cassell and Guy Pearce, they have like the, when they first meet, they're like brothers in sorrow, and they're comparing his wife's death to this guy's divorce, which is kind of like, damn, Guy Pearce, you are a pussy.
Yeah, he's the one who needs to actually fucking move on. It's really, I do think it's an interesting like character comparison, like to have these two versions of male grief like next to each other, where one is lamenting being an asshole and losing a good woman, and the other is lamenting still being an asshole and also losing a good woman.
I guess
Vincent Cassell is not necessarily an asshole. Yeah. What were we going to say?
No, he's not an asshole. He's just a little kooky, right? He's just like, I don't know. Maybe he needs to go see a counselor.
Yeah. For sure. Talk through some shit, man.
I just wanted to be in the box with her.
I love that line. I kind of get that.
I will say that was the most interesting like moment of the entire film was that exchange as their first date, and like the dynamics of a first date and a blind date at that, and that being the shit that he's telling. Yeah, that was a good moment.
Would that woman say, that's a lot to live up to? It's like, yeah, no shit.
Yeah, I love how at one point she's like, so are you horny enough for this? Or are we just going to, okay, you know what? I'm going to smoke a fucking cigarette. Cool, never mind. Cool.
He should have turned around and said, you can't smoke here.
He's too busy looking at his wife's skull. He's like, oh, let me zoom in. Oh, girl, you're still teeth. Beautiful.
Man.
Look at those teeth. I'm going to look at those JPEGs later.
All right. Yeah. See, that was one of those funny moments that's like, it's really morbid, but he's like, you want JPEGs?
Really badass looking dentist office, too. It's all futuristic.
Yeah. Big open room set. Where you got to share it with like 15 other people.
Yeah, but the lighting and all that, you know, the sets looks and good. Stuff yeah. all yeah. look really good in this.
Yeah. I don't know. That does highlight like one little teeny nitpick I have in the photography is like sometimes. And that dentist office is a great example. Sometimes you have practicals that are just so fucking bright in the background that it's competing like with my eyeball's attention to like, I don't want to look at the actors' faces anymore. I'm like, oh, look at that beautiful figure eight light hanging from the wall back there. Oh, it's so bright and beautiful. It's kind of distracting.
Yeah, that's because they shot this mostly at 1600 ISO. Because they were taking advantage of the new RE35, which can use lower light. And so, yeah, your practicals would be brighter than you normally would see them. They were using more natural daylight and then augmenting, which is kind of cool because I kind of guess that's the camera they were using because when they're inside at the restaurant, and there's so much detail outside the windows.
Yeah.
But it still feels like they're like shooting in lower light. It's very, very nice.
Yeah, I was also observing that. I was like, how indeed are these windows? Like later when he's back in the restaurant and they're doing the whole excavation thing outside the window, there was a moment where they cut to an angle and it feels almost fucking green screen because of like the disparate exposure for the outside and the inside at the same time. Like it was too clean to see both at the same time. It was like it felt kind of weird. But knowing that they're shooting high ISO makes that make a lot more sense.
Yeah, and I actually saw a camera test with this camera recently where they overexposed windows and were able to bring back incredible detail.
Interesting.
But like exposing to interior, letting the windows blow out and bringing back everything. Like wow. There was like nothing. The Alexa 30 has 17 stops of dynamic range. So
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah.
What?
You it is the next level thing.
17. Yeah. 15 is the biggest thing I've ever seen, and it has 17? Holy shit.
Yes.
Oh, I love technology.
When it works.
Well, it works. It looks really nice.
When it breaks, fuck this shit.
Another aspect of the filming, which I think is really interesting, is Cronenberg talks about how he doesn't like to do rehearsals. And the first time he ever hears the dialogue is the day on the set. They'll go through and they'll walk around and they'll say, okay, cool, this is where we're going to do it. And then the actors come in and they start doing their thing and he starts to nudge them on the day.
Interesting.
I mean, you know, for a low budget movie, they shot for 6 weeks. So,
wow.
Not,
I mean,
not
that's pretty quick. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know. That's kind of a lot of time. Most of this is just dialogue scenes. Like, you got makeup in the dream sequences, and then, I mean, that's it, right?
The whole movie is talking heads.
Yeah.
Like, there's no major action or anything. Even when you feel like there's about to be a big moment, when you get down by the waterfall and Guy Pearce is standing there bleeding, it's just still, let's land and speak, you know? There's no
And most of it's
moment.
Indoors. I mean, like, maybe like 10% of it is outdoors. There's very few scenes outside.
Hmm.
And almost all those are at the grave. Or that waterfall, or when he's talking to that Asian doctor. That's pretty much it. Everything else is indoors.
Yeah, the dog park was probably one of their more complicated scenes with all those background things happening.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that scene.
I really like the lighting in the dog grooming scene where he's like sat in a chair and how they wrap the light around his face depending on where he stands because they're still motivating from the window. It changes depending on the blocking, but it's just nice use of contrast and natural feeling lighting, but it's obviously lit.
Yeah, I think the visuals really flow well in this. That it did feel like a tone poem. Like there was just like you said earlier, Brian, the pacing of this is nice and slow and methodical and everything feels kind of dreamlike and floaty. And yeah, the photography really aids that feeling a lot.
And the feeling you get, the feeling you get when you hear a pelvis break, shake you to the fucking core. Like that actually, I've seen it twice and it actually got me both times.
Yeah. I about goddamn ripped my wife's arm off the first time I saw it in the theater. Like I was just, you know, just holding her arm. We were sitting there watching the movie. Oh my God. I was not expecting that sound effect. Best sound effect of the year.
Oof.
Yeah, you could hear it. Yeah, you can hear the celery break like you always do, the crunch and all the bones and all the movies. But I don't know what else they added that, like, oh, it sounds kind of like metally and plasticky and glassy all at the same time.
Yeah, it's a sharp thud. Yeah.
Beautifully done. Yeah, it was better than anything like ever done with Sam Jackson's Mr. Glass character in Unbreakable or that other movie. What was the other one called? Glass? Was it called Glass? Yeah.
Yeah.
They needed this sound team on that that series. It's so good, man. And the shrouds themselves were pretty cool. I really liked the hood part of them. I mean, the robe is kind of like, yeah, you know, it's a robe. But the hood piece was cool.
When they're in the display cases at the restaurant, it looks like they have eye slits. But then later on, when he puts them on, they don't. So I'm like, it's interesting that... Maybe those were early versions.
Or maybe they have some sort of bit to make it feel more like human interactive for the sake of being on display in the restaurant.
Right.
Yeah. Notice eye slits.
The woman he's on the date with describes them as like, I don't know, medieval ninjas or something like that. I don't remember what she said, but it was like, that's 100% right. Like, damn, that was perfect. Yeah. But they did have a little bit of like a looks like knight's armor kind of like
thing. It could be just how they're folded. Yeah.
Maybe.
Just for the display case. But when he puts it on later, it's just solid over the face.
Well, when I watch the Criterion Collection 4K, I'll take note.
It's in the trailer if you want to scroll through that. But
no, I'll wait for the 4K.
It give you a reason to watch it again.
Because Janice put this out, at least here in the United States, and you know that. That's the parent company for Criterion, so I would be really surprised if they don't end up putting this out.
Hmm.
Or Heartbroken, whatever. Take your pick.
Well, it's not. It definitely wouldn't be because it's making any fucking money.
Excuse me, that's $768,000 it's made.
Woo! Barely won't even cover the fucking, like, you know, the road cases it takes to deliver the hard drives.
Jesus.
Are they probably, it's all digitally streamed now.
It's all satellite feed, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a couple places that, out in the boonies, that have to do hard drives still.
Satellite feed, download 100 GB file?
I don't know how big these files are, actually.
I think that when they get the movie, they download it and then it's stored there and then they download the license and the license allows them to access that file so many times.
Correct.
Oh, interesting.
End, their license expires and it deletes the file or whatever. It's some kind of thing like that.
That makes sense. So it's like a DCP, but with extra licensing on top.
Yeah. It's got encryption on it somehow where it can only play so many times.
Yep.
That's why you got to be careful with those Fathom events, because some theaters, they won't download ahead of time and they'll just do a satellite feed stream. And apparently that looks like ass on the big screen because like John Carpenter's The Thing played like 3 or 4 years ago. And some people saw that in like L.A. and freaked the fuck out because it looked like pixelated garbage.
Ugh, I'd be losing my mind too. It's like, why does this look so bad? Are we watching a Blu-ray?
Are we watching a DVD? You remember?
Bro, a Blu-ray would at least have enough fucking like fidelity to do some shit. Probably more like Netflix and standard definition, pixelated blockiness.
I'm pretty sure that every time I've ever seen Rocky Horror in on like the big screen, it's been a fucking Blu-ray or a DVD.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. I mean, yeah.
It's like, this looks like ass.
I've never seen like any of those showings ever. I've never seen anybody have like a film print.
Yeah.
I'm sure they did back in the day, but ever since the early aughts, no. We gonna project that. What was it? The Orpheum? When they would do those movies during the summer, which
would show Wizard of Oz with a fucking DVD.
The menu would actually come up on screen for
And they would hit play. Yes, 100%.
Oh my god.
Yeah, back in the day, you'd see the DVD like logo bouncing across the screen waiting to fucking play.
Oh yeah.
Holy fuck, dude. That's goddamn embarrassing.
Yeah, well, it's probably not legal in a way.
We'll just cut out the FBI warning in the front.
You wouldn't steal how they a car. Would.
How they're going to fucking hit play and then skip past the FBI warning. It's burned in.
Click. Close the shutter. Ridiculous.
I love that old ad. Actually, you know, you wouldn't steal a car. And it's like, you know, I want that on a t-shirt with that same, like, fucking stripe letter.
Doom, doom, doo, 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 doo. Oh, yeah. I remember the music and everything. And that shitty frame rate on the fucking...
Oh, man, yeah.
On the footage.
Can we talk about Howard Shore's incredible fucking score in this? That we talk about tone. This movie's oozing with tone, but man, the score is what makes it feel like a fucking Cronenberg movie. It just it really like nestles it right into his vibe.
It's not my favorite Howard Shore Cronenberg score collaboration there, but I do like it a lot.
It is really nice.
I don't like the score as much as Crimes of the Future. I like that score better.
That was really good. And I was a little bit like the opening shot, you know, where the body's kind of floating there and we see that like fucking moth or whatever, the fucking firefly like floating around.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, holy shit, we're in for another fucking wild ride, and all that goes away. And it's the only thing we get, except for a little bit of spacey fucking feeling, you know, like dentist office and some lighting in other places, but most of it feels pretty like actually grounded instead of feeling futuristic.
I love that fucking transition where you're going in from like Vincent Cassell's fucking screaming face looking in at his wife in the crypt to the dentist chair. That is fucking beautiful. I love that.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about setting a tone for a whole fucking thing of like, oh, this dude is like in some pain and he's experienced some loss and that's where he goes when he's in pain and this is him processing and that. Like so much is fucking communicated just without saying a single line of dialogue. Yeah, that was an impressive opening for sure.
Yeah, the transitions, especially in the dream sequences when they go in and out of his wife, seeing his wife in the dream to, I guess, reality. Those are great.
And you made an interesting observation when we watched it, Brian, is that you said the opening titles and the closing titles is like the dust that people become. It's like you're
from dust to dust.
Well, I didn't understand what it was the first time I saw it. I was like, what the fuck is this? Is this like the first time I saw it was like, is this digital noise? Because the only thing I knew about the movie was like there was a tech guy that made something where you could watch your loved one decompose. That's all I knew about this movie going in. So I was like, oh, is this like digital noise or something? But then the second time I saw it, you can clearly see it's like the body silhouettes of two people
of things.
Kind of like holding hands.
Yeah.
And it's like their ashes. Or wait, no, what was it? You got so pissed at me for saying the word ash.
Yeah, you were saying it's ash, and I was like, it's not ash. You have to burn to get ash.
It's dust. That's what you said. You call dust. It dust.
Yeah.
Whatever. So it's their
ash.
Dust.
Ash means something burned, right? Am I wrong?
And they're specifically against cremation, and ash would only come from cremation.
Whatever, you get, it's decay.
You become
parts.
Carbonized. We're not carbonizing. we're rotting away to, you know, and does the, it would be interesting, does the shroud, like, make things, like, decay quicker, or does it slow it down so you can, like, prolong the decay? Like, really, like,
they don't answer that. It,
you know?
Yeah, it's not referenced at all. I mean, one could imagine that it would potentially slow some amount of decay because they don't seem to be actually... Well, they're not buried in coffins because they definitely dig up several spots that don't have any coffins. They're just straight in the ground, wrapped in the shroud. If the thing is like a complete wrap around the body, like it's not allowing most of the bacterial things that would, I would assume, happen during normal decomposition. Like, get in.
Wait till version 2 comes out and you get, like, smell-o-vision.
Oh,
you can
my
really,
God.
Like,
oh,
you
can, like, dude.
You're like,
oh, yeah. You just walk into Kirsch's house and be like, oh, who fought it?
Oh, whoa.
Oh, sorry, that's my wife.
You're like a fine cheese, darling. Mm. Good Stilton.
Ooh, maybe I should go dig her up. Just put her on a little bit of, just a little piece of her on my salad.
I should call her. But he doesn't have to call her because he has Honey, who is his wife in cartoon form.
Yeah, it's fucking weird.
But it's also his best friend, you know, his, you know, tech guy is also her.
Yeah, but he doesn't know that and like is disturbed when he finally realizes that. But also, okay.
He's like, right. You've been watching me jerk off? Like,
I mean, let's talk about it because I found it really, really surprisingly interesting that with so many sound effects in this movie that were so very clearly thought out, the sound effect that when Honey comes up is like a phone answering kind of sound. Like that whoom sound, that's like you're answering a FaceTime call. So like every time the fucking AI gets invoked, it sounds like a FaceTime call answering. Like there's a dichotomy there of like, is this actually an AI? Is it connecting to a computer that's a remote AI? Is it a thing that like someone else is doing and it's literally just their digital avatar? Like I liked the sort of subtle ambiguity around that. That they then kind of played with later.
Or did Karsh have that feature added in because it makes him feel like he's FaceTiming his fucking dead wife?
Ooh, yeah, because I was about to say, do you think that Murray, is he actively being Honey or is Honey still an AI? He's just influencing some information.
Yeah, that's been floating around in my head. I think it's a combination of both because there's too many times where like, he invokes the AI and it just like immediately happens like, and Maury can't necessarily like always 100% of the time be available to answer something in 3 fucking seconds. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, oh yeah. The first time you see her, like Guy Pearce is in the room. You're right.
Yeah.
Well, he's also on a computer. I guess he could be doing that.
But it's like FaceTime has like literal digital avatars that you can switch yourself to. They're called Memoji. And like, so there's a precedence for this kind of thing.
I wasn't thinking something that. Yeah. Okay, so you're thinking like he's like sitting in front of his computer, like actually acting out. Like, okay.
Yeah, he's putting on a koala suit. He's like, give me 1 second.
Well, no, like you can call someone and be a unicorn or a bear or a koala. Like there are literally things that are built into like the iOS stuff for this thing. So like it's not like he's taking a new concept and making it. It's just like I just found it really interesting that it was supposed to be this AI avatar thing that like, oh yeah, no, my tech guy is so fucking brilliant that he made me an entire Siri that for everyone else to use requires a goddamn team and like, you know, giant companies to make, but my tech guy just made me one. Like, okay, really? Like what level of tech guy is he? Or are you just like believing something that like someone told you? Like how is this actually working here?
I thought it kind of leaned a lot more into showing more into his actual life with his wife, where she actually probably ran his daily life and was in that role.
So
that is one of the bigger things he's missing is he doesn't have that groundness of someone that's there to help him, you know, with his daily crazy.
Yeah, his daily life seemed in the beginning of the movie, it seemed bigger than it actually was. Like as the movie went along, I realized that it was like, oh, this is just like one fucking like middle-aged guy that started a business and maybe has money or maybe just has a business that he started. Like his fucking apartment, the first time we go to it, I'm like, oh, this is a dope house. Like he's somewhere with a cool view and like this big place. No, he's just in a fucking building and he just paid a lot of money for like that one apartment to be. And then like the whole Tesla thing, like I think that's honestly of this entire movie in 2025, that's the part that's going to age the worst, the quickest. Was like, oh, he's got a Tesla, cool. So he must be like a hip tech dude, like, or he just is a guy who is kind of douchey and had enough money to buy a shitty car that like drives him around.
Well,
what's weird about that? Yeah,
I was gonna say like, okay, so Cronenberg totally wrote himself into this movie. Vincent Cassell's character looks just like David Cronenberg looked.
I wondered about that
30 years ago. All right, David Cronenberg drives a Tesla.
Shocking.
Right? And Vincent Cassell's character in this movie, his job before the Grave Tech, right, was he made industrial videos like Cronenberg the filmmaker. He says this movie is not autobiographical, and I understand that to a certain point. Like, obviously, he didn't, invent Grave Tech and has problems with Chinese and Russian espionage subplots. but it does seem like he put himself very front and center in this movie, and, like, so much about this movie is personal and part of his narrative and who he is.
Well, he even talks about when he's like, you know, some of the direction he gave, you know, Vincent Cassel was, I want you to deliver your lines. You're known for speaking really quickly. I want you to deliver your lines how I speak, calm and collective. And then when he talked to Diane Kruger, talked about her and landing her accent, removing her natural accent, he's like, I'd like you to study my accent and how I speak. And so he modeled both those characters off of himself and with his direction.
Wow, okay.
I can't believe Diane Kruger sounds the way she does in this movie, man. She sounds fucking almost like a Canadian. It is fucking scary.
Yeah.
You can't hear that German.
I definitely noticed that. I was like, wow, her voice has changed a lot over the years. Wow.
It's all acting.
Bombing hot, but...
Where's that lady from Inglourious Basterds? Where was her with her V's and W's that were V's?
Bridget.
Oh, man, this is the face that launched 1,000 ships from Troy back in the day.
Yeah, she's can kind of hear the accent in that one, though. Yeah. She's come a long way, all right? You know?
A long way. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I heard it in this, and I was like, oh, damn, okay.
You know, 20 years later, she got it licked. No, she was. I was very, very impressed with her performance. I thought she was the best one in the entire movie.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Especially jumping back and forth between like
three characters.
Three characters for sure. Like the sister, the actual wife, and then like the imagined version of the wife.
And best line of the fucking movie: "You need to fuck me quick before the buzz of that one wears off."
Dude, this movie is horny.
Cronenberg's horny.
All of his movies are horny.
My wife was actually asking me, it's like, what is up with Cronenberg? Like, always, like, he must be a pervert.
I was like, hey, this man fucks.
This guy fucks. He's trying to put himself in the movie. He just wants to imagine himself with Diane Kruger. I get it.
He's like, you know, fucking 80, bro. He can't get it anymore. He's like, all right.
But when I was like Vincent Cassel.
He's like, but when my wife was alive, let me tell you what, I got that body. God, I love your body. Oh, I want to go back to the body. The pure body. The mother's body. What the fuck did he just say?
What?
Did he say the mother's body? What the
fuck?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that. That was the best creepy line in the movie. It was just like, wait, hold up. What did he just say? Anybody got anything else?
Nah, I just wish Christian was here to talk about the female perspective in this movie. Because
we are.
Are any of the actual women in this movie like good characters, or are they just there to like move Vincent Cassel along? Because they seem kind of crutchy to me.
Man, I love them though.
Are you saying did it pass the Bechdel test?
I mean, not in so many words, but in so many words.
So the Bechdel test is two women talking in a scene where they're not talking about a man.
And how many words? Failed. All right, yeah, no, completely.
I can't think of a single scene where two women even spoke to each other.
Well, the sister
the
talks
part?
To the dog part.
Is that
part.
The only scene?
That's the closest that they come.
All right, there you go. It passes the Bechdel test. Damn.
But they were still talking about the guy next.
No, they weren't. They were talking about the dog.
You're right.
Yeah.
Was the dog a male dog?
No, it was a female dog because she says...
All right, we're good. We're safe.
She says, no, she's a work dog, but I think she still likes to be in here.
Yeah.
So as long as she was using her pronouns correctly, I think we're good.
Yeah, we're good.
I did love that they took the two versions of an appreciation for a dog, like a blind person who is literally having a service animal versus this veterinarian who's like, fuck it, it's too stressful. I just want to pet the dogs and make them pretty. I love the judgment happening between the two of them. We're like, one of them's like, no, my dog's fine. And the other one's like, oh my God, do you even care about this animal? And they're both like, this bitch.
I love it when he's finally fucking the sister-in-law and she's like, so what do you do with the dog when you're fucking...
Does it watch you?
That bitch is so fucking goddamn Randy horny and fucking dirty as shit.
I wish you could hear his inner monologue in these moments. He's like, this bitch is crazy. Like, I'm fucking insane, but this bitch is crazy.
Tell me about how the United States government did 9/11. Oh, God, I'm so wet. Oh, COVID-19's fake. Oh, it was a government conspiracy theory. Oh, my God. Thighs are sopping.
Have you ever seen loose change?
Ridiculous.
But she gets into it, like the fact that she's like, she throws out that clearly this guy is fucking her because she looks like her sister.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you like that? I like that you like that. I want you to like that.
I hope you're happy, Karsh. What the fuck?
You're happy, Karsh.
Oh, my God. Dude.
Hey, man, I like when somebody's up front with what they want, you know?
That's hot. Yeah.
Like that's what I'm saying.
Tell me what you want. That's hot.
He either lost his boner right then or he finished. Yeah.
Oh, no. Man.
100%. Either he's like, no, I'm out, or he's like, yeah.
And then it's got to be.
Is this his horniest movie?
No.
Like, I haven't seen all of the things. Crash, okay.
Crash and Naked Lunch are his two horniest films.
And Crash, the people like to fuck wounds.
Ooh.
You know.
Okay.
I mean, the whole plot of that film is they get into car crashes and they're like, you know what? That excites me.
Oh, right.
Got I'm hot.
Sure.
Why don't you fuck me? And they're like, well, your leg's broken, your wrist is broken. I'm pretty sure the air brag also fucked up your nose. Still do it. Okay.
Fuck yeah.
But this has got to be the longest, conversation where actors are exchanging dialogue during sex that I've seen on screen.
Bro, yeah, yes. For reals. I was thinking that, too. Like, it happens, two or three times. And, later, I was like, wow, this is not, let me just fast forward to this sex scene.
Wait, you can talk like this during sex? They just have total long conversations, huh? All right.
Well, I mean, it does make it a little bit more challenging because it's not just performance going through the motion. I need to look hot. I need to look like I'm in pleasure. You know, you're still having to do all that stuff, but deliver lines and react to what the person's saying. I don't know. It's like I respect that, I guess is what I'm getting.
Yeah.
At.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's uncomfortable, and also that's what he's really good at doing is making you feel uncomfortable, even when you least expect it. He's still get there.
For a movie that's ostensibly about voyeurism, it's a moment where it makes the audience question their own level of voyeuristicness, because we're watching two people have this intimate moment, but of the sex and the conversation, both things are equally high levels of intimate, that they're working through. And if it was one or the other, it would still be this is a good movie. We're watching this behind the scenes thing that normally you don't get to see, this kind of a moment between, someone else's couple, in real life. So this is why we go to movies, is to see this kind of thing. So sure. To combine both of them and make us want to lean in and experience what they're experiencing, both on a physical and an emotional level, but also be like, you know what, this is not super appropriate for me to be watching, because this is a deep, intimate, shared thing that they're experiencing. It's a really interesting balance that he strikes in that.
Told you Griggs would like this one more.
I'm surprised. I really am. But, you know, it's a little bit more accessible because it's more modernly shot and, you know, feels more modern. The last one was a little slow, and even the acting style was it's like an older style theatrical
That one's cold.
Style acting.
It's emotionally cold. You know, it's harder to get into that. Like, Christopher Nolan gets accused of being a cold filmmaker. He's kind of distant from it. I don't think he is. I think he's all up in it. I think he's really trying to be Steven Spielberg, whereas Cronenberg is distant. I feel like you're really removed from it, like everything, and we're watching everything. That's where it's really easy to get that voyeuristic feeling from his movies, because we're so far pulled out. This one it still has that quality, but I don't know, it still affects you. Emotionally, in a heartwarming way, not just a discussing or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A Cronenberg. It's interesting
you bring up the distant thing, because I listened to an interview with the DP and he talked about how they shot the movie on mostly the same lens. And it's
really?
It's around a 20. Yeah. It's the film is pretty much shot on one lens.
I did not even notice that.
And it's on the wider spectrum. So you're it's in a 20, 20, 25, 27, something like that. And, you know, so it just kind of has that vibe, you're a little bit wider, kind of looking at things instead of being so close.
You're kind of breaking my brain right now, Callan.
Like I said, it's not every shot, but he did say that the film is mostly one lens.
No, I can see it now that I'm thinking about it right now. Fuck. I watched that movie.
Four Every times time I talk. Thought I was out, you pulled me back in. God damn it. Well, that, you know, it is. It's one of the only movies I've seen lately that I've thought about a lot more after seeing it than, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I legitimately wanted to see this a second time because there's so much to parse through and think about in a way that, like, feels good to want to think about and parse through it. Like, even with all the heaviness and the difficult scenes in this movie, like, there's something about it that has kind of sat with me.
Cronenberg's one of these directors who can come up with a fucking strange idea, like, you know. What if a woman was to manifest, you know, her fucking rage into things that could, you know, act for her, you know? Or what if fucking, you know, the guy who's so obsessed with, like, his wife's body figures out a way through his, like, you know, his own way to still be with her and, you know, in the afterlife. I don't know. And he could take it to the next level and still make it interesting. These are ideas that you would come up with, you know, sitting around at film school. And people would try to make their little shitty short films, and they would never be able to acquire a tone. It would just be goofy. This is where trauma films come from. But this guy actually can take it and become, like, art and actually still make it thought-provoking and actually still enjoyable to watch and still be uncomfortable because that's his thing, you know?
Yeah.
He's mastered making the fucking crazy film, you know?
Yeah. I think Cronenberg experiences life as uncomfortable, and so he tries to communicate those things into his movies.
But when you hear him talk, he's like, this isn't serious, man. We're making make believe, you know. It's like we're children playing. It's not serious. He's like, people on film sets get all like up at their ass, and they're like, you know, this is, we're making a film. He's like, no, we're playing. we're having fun.
Yeah,
that's not what we're here to do. Which is interesting to hear him talk like that, because it does feel so thought out and, like, you know. And also, I don't rehearse my actors. We don't table reads.
This is happening.
I'm just like,
he's playing some of that stuff down, like, for interviews.
He has to be.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Because like, this is the same David Cronenberg that was working on like fucking Total Recall for like a year with Dino De Laurentiis, and like, when that movie fell apart and then it went on to become the Arnold Schwarzenegger blockbuster, it was like, it would cause him migraines just fucking thinking about it. So, I mean, obviously a lot of this stuff bothers him and he thinks about it. And it's always a little serious when you got that much money. And then like, am I going to be able to do something else if this tanks? And, you know, I had three projects before that tanked. Can I get money to make a movie? I mean, that's got to worry you a little bit. I mean, come on. I do appreciate him playing cool, though.
Yeah. It just makes him seem like so much more of a badass. He's like, things just happen around me, you know?
Well, I mean, that could also be like a level of like not trying to toot his own horn. Like, how much of directing is done in the casting? If he knows he got the right actors to do the thing and he trusts them, then, like, yeah, maybe.
That's exactly what he says in these interviews, dude. Exactly.
Yeah,
verbatim.
Dude.
Like,
he said the script directs more than I do. He said even down to the crew.
But that's some real fucking talk. Like, if you get the right people and they understand the script and they've gone through it and you trust their deliveries and shit, like, try it once. Like, okay, you understand the core of what this is supposed to be, and I want you to interpret the rest of it so that we can make something magical that I wouldn't have thought of otherwise. That's a fucking brilliant way to direct. And if people are getting on those sets and feeling this level of freedom to be that so authentic and so connected, well, they're fucking, literally fucking. That's, I mean, that's pretty fucking solid direction.
Well, I mean, it's like one of those things, like you listen to those interviews with David Cronenberg, he's always like, we talked about how he doesn't do the rehearsals, right? But then in that same interview, he'll be like, so we didn't have money for an accent coach, so... you know, Vincent Cassell and Guy Pearce and Diane Kruger just kind of hung out with me and listened to me and how I spoke, you know, to get the accent. And it's like, okay, well, how did they do that? By hanging out with you and talking to you. I'm sure you guys weren't just talking about bullshit all the time. You were talking about this film and this project you were working on. Yeah, it's not rehearsals, but you're doing so much prep ahead of time. Like, don't play it off, bro. Like, you don't do nothing and just this shit comes to you naturally. He's putting in that time and effort.
He's connecting with the actors so that they trust him and he trusts them. Exactly. And like maybe they're not going through the material itself, but there's an understanding, there's a familiarity, there's a comfortability that if you're going to have such emotional like rawness in front of a person, you need to have a comfortability with them in the first place. And that's the hardest fucking part of directing any actor is creating an environment that like they want to do those things. And that's really, I think, the magic of being on a proper film set is those are the people that are familiar with, like, we're creating a space for the actors to do the thing. Like, it's not about the actors, but we still have to create a space for them. And that's that can be hard to do. It takes some time.
Yeah. Can I trust you?
Yeah.
Are you going to make me look okay?
Yeah. Yeah. Can I let go of the insecurities, of the anxieties, of the self-consciousness that is inherent to the human condition and be this, inhabit this character that we're trying to, you know,
that's
explore?
Very, very true.
But that's the fucking dream, isn't it? That's what everybody who's getting on a fucking film set is trying to do, to at least some extent.
It's so hard to be able to get to such a relaxed state, though.
Yeah.
Because you've got so much pressure on you and so many people looking at you and you're worried about fucking getting the image there and where's the camera need to be and, oh shit, we've only got an hour and a half to get these fucking two pages done. You know, holy shit. So we're going to have to cut this next scene or we're going to have to come back. We can't come back because they're repainting this end of the building by tomorrow. Like, what the fuck? You know, like.
Yep. And then you got to take all that shit and then put it away. Yeah. And like, if as an actor, like, you don't get to, like, directors trying to prevent their actors from having to think about those things just so they can be in the space and like managing the set so that other people can take care of those things. Like, let the producer deal with that. Let the, making movies is hard, man.
It is.
But I'm glad David Cronenberg is still making them. I was a little worried there for a while that he wasn't going to make anything else, but
he's still talking like he's got another one in him. He's like, you know, I'm kind of getting to the point where I feel like I'm going to want to make another one, you know?
I hope this is not the last Cronenberg. Although, you know, if it was, it would be a fitting end.
That's fair.
You know, the tone, what this movie's saying, it does kind of like he put himself in the movie, kind of wraps up his career. It's a summary video of his legacy.
It's about a guy who's really into bodies, you know?
Like, he made a career out of bodies, right?
Yeah, that's right.
What are you guys rating this thing? Come on, who's going first?
I'd rather have someone else to give me some shit to think about and then like respond to. But all right, I like this movie, and I also did not like this movie. I think the fact that this movie has been sitting with me for the last like 5 days or whatever it's been is better than I thought it was going to be. I love the tone of this. I love the overall mood that he accomplishes. I think the environments are really interesting. I think the three main characters, four-ish, five and a half, whatever. Vincent Cassell is pretty fucking fantastic in this. I love Guy Pearce. The fact that Guy Pearce's biggest moment in this, like his face isn't even on fucking screen and he still kills it, I think is actually probably worth watching just for that. Like he has a really interesting character in this. Like, for a guy that can have gravitas and charisma to feel so like weaselly and yes, gross and like he just, it's such a fucking interesting character, and I really, really loved Guy Pearce in this. And Diane Kruger is just, she's gorgeous, man. She kills it in this role. Like, I really liked the two versions, like the dream wife and the sister, and like, I don't know, I believed her in all the moments. Fuck, the acting is really good in this movie. I want to give this movie an 8, but like, it's mostly from the sake of like, yeah, there are uncomfortable moments, but they're supposed to be uncomfortable moments. I just don't like the type of uncomfortability that Cronenberg likes, if that makes sense. Like, those are not an enjoyable thing for me. Like, I know what I'm getting in a Cronenberg movie, and I know that it's not my vibe. It's not my jam. This was a really fucking good movie, and there were a lot of really great elements in it. It's just not overall still my jam because it's still a Cronenberg movie. There are parts where I'm like, ew, icky, and I don't want to feel those fucking things in a movie. But this is dealing with heavy things. I love the grief. I love the obsession. I love the what kinds of things are we willing to do to like
stay and hold on to the ones that we love. And like, I think that's a really interesting exploration that is not something that's dealt with a lot of times in art, especially contemporary, like actual film. So I'm glad this movie exists. I think I'm talking myself more into a 9 here. I fucking hated all the times we had to watch a goddamn iPhone or an iPad and sitting in fucking like someone's knees and like for 2 minutes.
It felt alive still.
Ah, no, that was boring as shit. And those were the moments where the movie just really fucking drags. Like seriously, every single time we're watching something on a screen, I was like, please, can we just cut away and shorten this? Please, please, please. There was not a single time that I was like, I want this to be on screen as long as it is. The only moment that was close to that was when we were watching Guy Pearce with the fucking hidden phone in her pocket or whatever, which felt... It felt authentic for the first half of that, and then after that, it felt like a gag, like where they're like, "Oh, we're not even going to like actually show his face because she's trying to hide." And it
when they went
it just
to
felt
the kitchen,
yeah. And I was like, "All right, come on, we fucking get the gag. We understand. Can we just please like see the performance? Goddamn, or like cut away to the reaction shots while they're watching him do this shit or something, so we're not staring at a fucking phone without even a goddamn face on it for 4 minutes on a fucking big screen. What the hell are we doing?"
I'll give you that
Pierce
scene.
Is like, what the fuck?
I don't know about the rest of them, though. I kind of like the rest of them being on the phone. I'll give you that one, though, 100%.
I ended up spending more time being like, all right, where's the rock and roll happening on this fucking shot? Because it's still clearly moving, but it's not moving enough to actually be a still frame, but it's definitely not, like, fucking walking around. So, like, and the fact that we had, like, 6 or 8 or however many fucking times, that was too much. That's worth a point coming off in and of itself. I'm sorry. That was too much.
I see what you're saying. Right, didn't really bug me.
The music was really great. Howard Shore is pretty fucking fantastic. I did love the tones. I do wish I could have seen this movie again. There's enough denseness to it. There's enough of like questions and wait, was that the truth? Was that the truth? Like there's some solid things here. I will probably watch it again when it comes out on some level of streaming if it's available. But I liked it, but I hate myself for it. It's a 9.
That was a review right there, ladies and gentlemen.
That was a review, man.
Jared, you go next. Or you going last?
Oh. Of course, I'm going next. Okay. I can't. You're going to have way more better things to say.
Not really.
But you know, Mike said it all. You know, but you know, I think all that uncomfortable shit that you're feeling is what you're supposed to feel. And it's interesting. And when I think about it, is like actors go to work with Spielberg because that's going to open them up to a larger audience and it feels like they're going to be able to like explode into more mainstream, right? But actors go work with Cronenberg because they want to flex a muscle, because they want to get in here and do something weird, but they still know that it's going to come out and it's still going to be, you know, it's going to be worthy of doing, you know?
That was so sexy. God. Did you just hear what that man said, Griggs? Oh, that was I just got a little fucking hard on listening to Jared right now. Oh, Jared, please continue.
But you know, so I think it is a masterclass in because he knows how to fucking tell a story and he knows how to keep you captivated. I think the movie was a little bit slow at times, but I still was like hanging on. And like I said earlier in the podcast, this is one of the movies that I've thought about more and more after seeing it, and I would go see it again in the theater if it were still out. And I've already seen it twice. I wish that it hung around longer than a week. And it's impossible to find on streaming now still. It's a shame. And, you know, I feel like people are missing out. And you know, ride the wave. Get in there. Feel the fucking uncomfortable shit, because that's what's good. Cinema is supposed to challenge us, and it's supposed to, you know, we can't just live in our warm little, like, you know, cozy Marvel movies all the time. You know,
damn straight.
Like, you know, I think it's interesting and it's intriguing. And of course, it's going to go to Criterion. And that's probably where I'll end up watching it again as well. I don't see anywhere to give it but a 10, because it actually is thought-provoking. It's fucking excellent. It's beautiful. I love the fucking score. The acting's top-notch. It makes me have feels. It gives me cinema vibes. Cronenberg's not my favorite director, but God damn it, he knows how to make me feel things.
Well said, Jared Callen. Well said. Yeah, guys, I don't even know what to say. Look, I am so happy that Malco Theaters picked this up for fucking the 6 days that they had it, you know, from Friday to Thursday. That was awesome. I saw it 3 times. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. You know, we're able to bring in the foreign
total
filmmaker
12 tickets sold
from Canada.
hey, it's going to cost more money for him to make his movies now if he wants to like get them in America.
That's true. Yeah, as literally the day we're recording this, Donald Trump is going to tariff Hollywood. You know, like fuck foreign films.
Oh,
or
my God.
I'm not 100% Jesus sure Christ what that means. None of us do. So
I don't think he understands how films are made.
We're going to figure that out. Hopefully, we still get foreign films here in the United States, and we're not just watching Marvel movies. Yeah. Also, fucked. Diane Coogler, you know, as much as skin she shows in this movie and everything, I do want to point out, she is like 2 years away from 50.
Yeah, no.
When she made this movie, she
looks incredible.
She is a perfect example of a woman's body. Like, she looks amazing, but she looks like a real person. She's not...
Because she has had no work done, Greg.
She
right?
is not a body that is designed for men who are attracted to fucking teenagers. She is a goddamn woman, and she's gorgeous.
And I super appreciated. You can see her breast in the movie, but you can see the aged flaws in them, and I so loved that. And it made it feel more real and even more uncomfortable in the moment. Because you really felt like you were seeing something that was not dolled up in a Hollywood gloss and light, even though it was still well lit and well photographed.
Oh, it was lit,
but it's not it's not that hot. It's not like Basic Instinct or something where we're like we're taping boobs and everything's perfect. I was disturbed by it, but the thing I think I was most disturbed by was it was the first time in a Cronenberg movie, with maybe the exception of The Dead Zone and The Fly and In Butterfly, where I fucking felt goddamn emotions, man. Like, I cared about these people and these moments that were also, like, very horrific and gross and creepy were very endearing. Seeing your – still being there for your partner when they're going through a terrible hospice end-of-life situation. Being able to still have a relationship, still being able to hold on to what was there. But it's also changing. I love that scene when Kirsch is talking to the blind Asian woman. She's like, you know, were you able to have sex in the end? And he's like, no sex possible. And then she's like, well, you know, then she died. What about then? And the way he says, no sex possible. I mean, oh, man, I just get it. And it's little moments like that just crumble you to your feet. You feel the grief. You feel the sadness. I'm gonna have to give it a 10, guys. It's just, it really is like unsettling, heartbreaking perfection. Tone out the ass perfection.
Ruminating on the love within loss, The Shrouds is a personal and peculiar examination of grief by director David Cronenberg. Rotten Tomatoes brings in The Shrouds with a 75% tomato meter and a 57% popcorn meter. Fuck these people.
57? For real? Is that high?
57.
I thought the popcorn meter would be like fucking
oh,
goddamn
you were saying
10.
That's high?
Yeah, dude. I thought it'd be like 10 or 2 or like, you know, like anytime you make somebody feel uncomfortable, you know, they're just like, nope, don't like it. I can
I'm
see
right
them.
Here, Brian.
whatever, Griggs. I heard,
I'm trying to find a bad
I heard your beautiful speech. I heard your 9. Oh, yeah, it was music to my ears after fucking the Brood thing. Come on. Griggs, I think you growed so much since last week.
No, the Brood is a terrible fucking movie. This is actually a good one.
All right, that's you just burned difference. It all down.
Cronenberg may be trying to pull off the neat trick of how grief can be distracted by the deep dive into conspiracy theories, but the film ends up doing the same to the audience, who may be more interested in its ideas than its mystery. You see, I think that if you try to focus too much on the conspiracy theory bullshit, you're missing the heart of the film.
Those are the same people that watch movies with subtitles because they have to know every single thing that's said instead of just experiencing the film as an emotional journey.
Yeah. Sometimes you don't need all that extra fluff. They're just, you know, that's a misdirection.
Sometimes just if you can't hear the dialogue, maybe you're not supposed to.
Oh, you're talking about in Sinners?
So on that note, we're not touching that with a 50-foot pole. Maybe we'll do Sinners. Anyway.
We should.
Yeah, we should. But we already did From Dusk Till Dawn. Anyway, so with that, you've been listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so. You can send all the hate email to moviecrewpod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Jared, where can they follow you?
You can find me on X at Jared B. Callen.
Greg's work in our audience. Follow you.
I'm on Instagram at GrigsyMedia. That's G-R-I-G-G-S-Y Media.
And you can find me on X at Elkins Edits. And I guess we'll close out with the tail end of track number one. We're only going to play like the last 20 seconds because of, you know, copyright reasons and stuff. We're going to be playing the last 20 minutes of track number one titled The Shrouds. Enjoy.
20 minutes is a long track.
20 minutes is going to be really long.
I meant 20 seconds, goddammit. You know what I meant. Come on. Put it together. Fuck you guys for not correcting me right away.
Well, you know, we figured you'd edit it.
We're like, wait for it, editable time, and you're an editable brain.
These are the podcast hosts I got to put up with. They're just like, no, just keep saying your dumb shit. Let them think you're an idiot. Yes.
I took a cup, and I put some dirt in it. Just give me an F and move on.